Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks so much for spending some of your precious time with us. And thank you so much for putting up with the fact that I was away for a few weeks. But we're back. And we're back with one of our favorite guests, Reverend Mother Christina Rake is with us. And this time we are going to hear the whole story from beginning to end. And I'll leave you wondering what that whole story is. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. One of the themes that we focus on a lot is walkabout, and that's obviously going to be the way we look at Reverend Christina's story. But I watched a movie this week that I had only heard about recently. It's called Wild. It's Reese Witherspoon stars in it, but it's a true story. And the woman had written a book about what happened, and then it got picked up for this movie. It's the story of Cheryl Strayed, who was going through very, very difficult times in her life, and then her mother died, and she couldn't figure it out. And so she decided that she was going to walk the Pacific Crest Trail, which goes from Mexico to Canada along the high points of the mountain range that goes up through California. So she hiked 1,100 miles in 94 days by herself. She had never hiked very much before. She had certainly never backpacked and slept in the wilderness. She really just winged it, you know, looked up what she thought she had to take, and took way too much, as usually happens when people start out. And she would stop at the way stations along the trail, and people would send her care packages to these way stations because they knew about when she would get there, and people helped her along the way. But mostly she got to be alone and quiet with her own thoughts and her memories and her grief about her mother, and come out of it in so many ways a very different person. And literally a few days after she completed her trip, she met the love of her life, got married, and started a family. So it's one of those quintessential walkabout stories. And I recommend the movie highly. Reese Witherspoon does a great job. And if you get the DVD in the extras, there are interviews with the woman who actually lived it and a lot of background information. It's a very emotional movie to watch for me. But we're all on walkabout. At one time or another, everybody goes through some transition where the only thing that you can do is kind of walk away and take a break and do something different. For me, also, it was the death of my parents and the end of my first marriage that put me in a situation of, what do I do now? Who am I? What am I doing? What's going on here? And that led me to my teachers that I apprenticed with and all the shamanic work that I do. But the thing about walkabout is going into whatever the wilderness looks like and honoring that you know what you're doing and that spirit knows what it's doing and that you will be guided and learning to follow that guidance. And it doesn't have to look like the Pacific Trail and 3 months in the wilderness. There are many, many, many ways that people do that and basically adventure, that inner adventure and outer adventure, that absolute change in what you're doing that leads a change in you, to a change in you. And that's why I always ask our guests, how did you wind up doing this? And what's your story? And what was your journey? Because there's theme and variations of whatever the crisis was and how they dealt with it and what they learned and how things changed after they went through that transition. So I always put it out there because I want people to think differently about life and realize that there are these transitions and there are these walkabouts, and it's a good thing. It's not an easy thing. It's definitely a test, and it's definitely learning, and it's often scary, and you come out different. You come out healed. You come out changed. You come out knowing who you are in a different way and understanding life in a different way. And if you talk to the people around you, especially the older people that seem like they know a lot of stuff, you will find out that they had something like that that happened in their life that made all the difference for them. So tonight, we are going to spend some time with Christina Rake once again, but this time we're going to take two episodes of the show, and we are going to hear her story from the beginning to this moment. And Christina, I am so excited to do this with you.
I am too, and I just had a paradigm shift while you were talking, so I was taking notes.
Yeah, sorry.
It's why you rock my world, David. I was like, ooh, and then I wrote something down, but I'm better now.
Anyway, so, you know, I feel like it's one of those stories where we say, when last seen, our heroine was. So the thing that fascinates me about, because I've been on the sidelines watching you do some of the things in the last few years, but all of this started when you were a little kid.
Yes. Yeah, it did. And when you were talking about the walkabout, I was trying to think, at what point in my life was there this paradigm shift? The weird thing is there wasn't. There were all these moves towards where I am. But when you walk with one foot in each world, mm-hmm. like half of you is on the other side already, or it just never left. And that's where all of the interior work went. That was always the desert. I looked like I was having a perfectly normal time. Well, not normal, but I'd be at the store. But what's happening in my mind and internally and spiritually was constantly moving or not moving. And so that walkabout, what I wrote down was I did the walkabout with the other leg.
Well, that's why I said it doesn't always look like this very neatly packaged crisis, go on walkabout, experience who you are having done the walkabout. You know, there tends to be some version of that. And I'm also, there's part of me that thinks that everybody who has, you know, a spiritual awareness and is on the planet at this point is just on walkabout. But that's what we're here to do. That we don't really understand what we're going to learn and what things are going to be like at the point that we understand whatever it is we came to understand. But that so many people are basically constantly on walkabout or on sequential walkabouts. That there's,
right.
that there's a transition and you go through it and you say, okay, here's what changed. And then the next adventure appears. And it's always the question of, do you have the courage to go into that next unknown to see who you become?
And, you know, I think as I start to talk about especially some of these earlier incidents, everybody will realize that my walkabout is that I have a body. It's my birth. It's the walkabout. It's learning this.
Right. Well, but not just that.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about that little kid who, I mean, I don't want to tell the story, but the little kid both was having experiences that not everybody has, and also basically had a revelation at a very early age of something you were supposed to do that seemed totally impossible.
Well, the first thing you need to know, my parents always tell me this, was that I was just absolutely adorable. I really was. Not anymore so much, but I don't mean, you know, physically. I mean, I was very quiet, and they used to fight over who would babysit me. People paid my mother to be the one to watch me that night. And I'm not even being sarcastic. It happened. They would fight over it. I was just very quiet. Everything that happened around me, I took in. I saw everything. I processed everything. But I was just very content to be by myself, and I had companions. But one of the earliest formative experiences for me, and I think this is the moment when God let me know that I had a calling. I was baptized, but I was not raised in the church. My mother was Catholic, and went to 15 years of Catholic school. And as she says, I'm okay now. But
I was trying to find the right words. Yes.
And she went to school. Vatican II occurred between middle school and high school for her. So she went from High Latin, started, you know, ended school in May, and in fall there were nuns without habits and guitars and stuff. And, but she loved it because they suddenly opened up and wanted intellectual inquiry and stuff. And she loved that part, learning the theology. But my father comes from a long line of Native American type spiritualities. And so from his perspective, you know, when mom would take us to church on Easter, which is the only time we went, dad wouldn't come. So, but I learned so much of my morality and ethics from him because he was a doer, not a talker. But anyway, this first experience, we were living with my grandparents in Jersey City. We had a brownstone, three stories, like most of the homes there. And my grandparents were very politically active, and my pop-pop basically had the place wired. And it was my birthday. It was my fourth birthday. And I'm sitting in the back on the stoop like I usually did. And they actually had a yard in the city, which was unusual. Right. Bunch of trees and big high wood fences. And I'm sitting back by the rose bushes. And what I wanted for my birthday more than anything, and I talked about it for weeks, was a Holly Hobby watch. I always had a fascination with, well, yeah, I'm dating myself. I always had a fascination with watches, and I wanted a Holly Hobby watch, Holly Hobby watch. And my mother had this really sadistic habit of, in order to heighten our joy at the moment of receiving the gift, she would convince us that there was no way she could have gotten it beforehand. And so she went, oh, I just couldn't get it. I'm sorry. I don't want you to be disappointed. Oh, I hated that. But she did it every year. And finally, when she told us she couldn't get something, we knew we were getting it. But I was very disappointed when she said, honey, they're hard to get, but we're going to try our best. And so I'm sitting on the stoop. They're baking my cake. And I had always been very close to God without knowing anything about him. And I just sort of looked up and said, I hope that I get that Holly Hobby watch. And something clinked on the sidewalk next to me. And I look and there's a shiny thing there. And this memory is so emblazoned on my brain. I look up and there's this crow up on the top of the fence. It flew off. And I got up and I walked over and picked it up. And it was the Holly Hobby watch face, rusted, with half a broken wristband on it. And I ran into the house and look what I found. Now, my mother was furious because she thought I'd gotten into the closet and found my present. And she went into the closet and came out white, holding the box with the other watch in it. And so what we did was we took the watch face from the one I found and put it on the other band. I still have it. It still ticks, and I bring it with me on every important occasion. But that was the huge moment, I think, when God told me, your whole life is going to be about timing. It's going to be about timing. So that was just an unforgettable moment. And it was in that same backyard that I met up with, I didn't know who he was, but there was a gentleman who used to come and I used to talk to a lot. And I, looking back, realized much later in life that this was my guardian angel. And I remember standing by this tree and just talking to him and a couple other people who would come and tell me things. I can't remember the words, and this still happens when I get a message from the Holy Spirit. It's not in words. If you ask me what was just said, I have to find a way to explain it. It's just like a program is uploaded, info is uploaded.
Right.
So that from the very beginning, there was this relationship there that was extremely powerful. And I never felt alone. Even I'd spend hours by myself. God help you, had to watch me because I would do experiments. It was also kind of bright. I tried to fly. And jumped off the third story balcony and landed in the rose bushes. I was okay. I took Christmas hooks and hooked them hook after hook. At the first end, put it on a big wad of toilet paper, put it in the toilet, and at the other end, took it to a car and flushed the toilet and watched the car go down the hallway. And then everybody was screaming, why are there Christmas hooks in the toilet? My response was always, well, you didn't specifically tell me I couldn't do that. I didn't think it was a big deal. So, yeah, if Christina was quiet, you better go find her. She's doing an experiment. But when I moved into our first house, it was in New Jersey on the Jersey Shore, Canis Drive, the Street of the Wolf. It was haunted. And of all the places for them to move me, it was that one. So that became sort of my proving ground for learning how to do the mediumship I did, because they came and got me. They would come and wake me up, would talk to me. People saw this guy. My mother still tells the story, and I don't know what it is with trees with me, but I was out front walking home from kindergarten. We had a stand of trees in the front yard, and I'm talking to someone animatedly, and my mother can't see to the right of me, but that's the direction I'm facing. She came out on the step and said, sweetie, who are you talking to? And I said, Bill. And she came flying out that door and around that stand of trees. And I was by myself. And she said, where did he go? And I went, he's right there, Mom. And God bless them. My parents, right from the beginning, immediately recognized what I was doing and what I could do. And they treated it like it was perfectly normal. It was just, this is something you can do, as if I could sing. This is just a talent you have.
Right.
And I was very fortunate for that, because I know a lot of people who didn't have that experience, didn't have their parents asking them, Christina, do you think we should do this or that? And giving them advice about, I don't think we should do that. Honestly, I was 8 years old, wielded such power. If we were about to do something and I suddenly would literally dig my heels in and say, I think that's a mistake. They listened. They didn't always obey, but they listened. You know, I got listened to. But it was in that house where I started to have some of the darker experiences of what it means to be a spiritual little kid. And it was terrifying at times. And what surprises me about those experiences was how well I handled them. I honestly can't believe the way all of this to me seemed so natural and normal, as if this was the way the world was supposed to be, that I had to get the snot teased out of me before I knew to not talk to other people about it. I had to learn that this was paranormal and not normal. Right. But there were several instances when I would be asleep in bed and something would hit me or choke me, kick me out of the bed. So many times. Yeah. It's like, dude, you know, I'm nine. I have stuff to do. But I guess it was about 8 or 9 and I had a bunk bed, slept on the top bunk. It was my own room. No one slept under me. And I was asleep. And all of a sudden, I felt weird. I woke up and I was looking down. And I was levitating 3 feet to the left of my bed, looking down. And I started kicking and jerked myself upwards and went flying across the room, my mouth hitting the roof of my mouth into the corner of the dresser and flipping over and down, crashing. And I just kind of got up, shook it off, climbed back up the bunk bed and went to sleep. It's such a silly thing, but that's just, I didn't tell anybody. This was my interior world. I didn't talk about it. And when I woke up in the morning, I thought I dreamt it. And I go into the bathroom and I just wiped my mouth with my hand and down came flaked blood. And I lifted my mouth up, it dried caked blood everywhere. And again, didn't tell anybody. And it's because I wasn't alone. I wasn't handling this alone. It was almost as if God was my companion and I was just told, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And I didn't.
Well, we're going to be going to break in a little bit and I want to make sure people know how to find you. So why don't you tell us your web address?
Sure. You can find out more about me at www.christinarake.com. All one word, Christina's with a K. You can also find me on Facebook if you like my page, Reverend Mother Christina Rake or Reverend Christina Rake. Or you can go to our group's webpage, My Old Catholic, and like that page. And you'll find out all about me, what I'm doing, and have some fun, too.
We always have some fun with you. Never a dull moment.
Well, that's what I aspire for.
Then you have achieved success, Reverend Mother. Okay, we will be back shortly, unless we get taller. We're just going for a short break. Don't go nowhere. This is David Franklin Farkas with Reverend Mother Christina Rake here on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Be right back.
is styling your hair every day, and you want a good hairstyle every day. Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home, where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Reverend Mother Christina Rake, telling the beginning of the saga, the walkabout story, the tale. So this little girl had a revelation of what she was supposed to do later in life.
I did. And what was interesting was I wasn't raised inside the Catholic Church, but the area was so Catholic that people didn't know what a Protestant was. We had two major Catholic churches just in my town. And one had 15,000 families, not 15,000 people, 15,000 right households, and the other had 12,000 households. This was not a big town. And so we would go on Easter, and some of my strongest memories were of being in that church. And now I have no knowledge, but that pull was amazing. I still remember my brother's baptism when I was 3. Being in that place felt so much like home that I would dream about it. And when my mother would take us, I always wondered why they told the same story every Easter, you know, about the rock and the guy and the angels. Why'd you think he was there? And I would ask my mom, why did they think he was there? Because he was dead, honey. Oh, I was just like completely lost. I was always like, why can't I go get the cookie from the man in the dress? Like mom would go up, And I'm like, why can't I take the cookie? It doesn't taste good anyway. Oh, so it was like this weird conversation. And I grew up like that. All of my friends went to CCD after school, which is the process that you go through for confirmation in your teens. They all had CCD. They all had Sunday school. I was home on Sundays. My neighbors were at Sunday school. This one was at Sunday school. I wanted that. And I didn't even understand what that was. And I would put on robes and I would, you know, have an altar like that. And I didn't go enough to even know how to do it. But I knew you were always raising stuff up over your head a lot. So I did that. It was my obsession with it was so bizarre for someone who just barely went. And I used to get yelled at all the time because I would bring it up, and I did this on purpose, while my mom was with me and her parents, my Nana and Papa. And I would say, Mom, when can I start CCD? I knew what was going to happen. My Nana turned around. Why don't you bring those kids to church? Mom, I'm not bringing them to. And my mother would get so mad at me. And she's like, why'd you bring that up in front of Nana? And I was always an honest kid. I said, because maybe she'll talk you into it. But that obsession was there. It was so strong. It was overwhelming. And the saddest part about it as I went through the end of elementary school, middle school, and high school was I just sort of incorporated this notion that I wasn't good enough for it. It's so sad, and I didn't have the kind of knowledge to come to that conclusion, but it was so other and so holy to me that I figured I'd miss the boat. I didn't know that you could become Catholic after you were, you know, 10. I thought you had to be raised in it. I really had no knowledge of it at all. I knew what lycanthropy meant. I studied the paranormal. But for me, the paranormal was a substitute for the religious. It was as close as I could get to that world. Through a back door, really.
Right. But you had this fascination with the priesthood.
Yes, absolutely. With the priesthood and with ministry. When I was in high school, I was voted. This is so funny. I was voted most likely to become a cult leader. I read it by this joke poll we had. They were in drama. You're going to be a cult leader someday. But people would come to me with problems. And I would preach sermons in my bathroom. And I remember the one time I did it, and David knows this about me because he's known me a bit. I have a problem with birds. I'm not afraid of them. I mess them up. I mean, I don't know how, but I remember preaching this sermon, and oh my gosh, I was going on and on about the Eucharist and about baptism, these things I was just learning about. And I opened the blinds to the bathroom, and there were hundreds of birds in my yard. Hundreds of them. Oh, my gosh. Birds are suicide bomb me constantly. One just hit my bedroom window. I was praying. You just hear thunk. And I'm like, there's another dead bird.
It was your congregation.
Yeah. It was St. Francis at an early age. But yeah, that obsession with the priesthood, and yet not knowing, first of all, that there was a way even into the pew. And second, to be a minister, I didn't know that a woman could do that. Again, so Catholic. I didn't know there were female religious leaders out there. It wasn't until my junior year of high school, Sister Act 2, the sequel came out, and I was watching television, and they did a behind the scenes, and they showed the church where it was filmed. It's a United Methodist church, and they talked to a pastor, and it was a woman. And you should have seen my face. I actually stood up and walked toward the television, And I can still see myself one hand on top of those TVs. TVs used to be really big guys in the day. Yep. I would stand right on top of the TV and my forehead leaning in like I was reading fine print. And I'm like, what church is this? What religion is this? And I'm like, no, no, what religion is this, guys? And I'm waiting for them to put it up. And they finally put up the name. I said, United Methodist Church. And I kept it in my head. And it was in my first year of college, about a year and a half later, I went to an all-girls Catholic college run by the Sisters of Mercy. And the first church we went to on our little tour of different faiths for my religious studies class was a United Methodist church right down the road from my college. Guess who was there that Sunday?
Wow.
It was like, all right, there's one I can get into. And it was so amazing to me, this revelation. I would never have thought in a million years that I could do that. And I thought that was as close as I could get. So that was good enough. It was good enough for them. While this is happening, as I moved through high school, my gifts were coming and going. I should put it this way. I was stopping them, and I was very glad to, because the one thing you don't want to be when you're younger is different.
Right.
And I was continuously set apart as it is because of my IQ. They kept trying to kick me out of public school. They would call my mom every grade right. and be like, you know, Christina is teaching the other kids algebra. And my mom's like, what's the problem with it? Mrs. Davis, this is first grade. She's just going to confuse them.
Well, for the people in the audience that don't remember some of the other stories, you're a member of Mensa and you write the questions for tests like the SAT. You are, as we say in this part of the country, wicked smart.
The funny thing is, I'm trying to convince people I'm not, right? I'm normal. I don't have paranormal gifts. I'm not smart. I decided I'd be bad at math because girls are bad at math. So I just kept flunking math. And the only way for me to flunk it was to not do anything, because as soon as I started doing it, my competition would kick in. I'm an Aries. And I'd be like, no, I must do the best. And so I just, you know, stopped doing that. But I just wanted to fit in like we all do. And I knew I couldn't fit in all the way. But you know how we get into high school and we all want to be different, but we want a bunch of other people to be with who are different the same way we are.
Yep.
So I found that in drama club. And drama club, this is my life, is very much a story of trying to get where I am right now, to feed the need to do this in other ways. And that fed the need to be in front of an audience and speaking to them and preaching and teaching and talking to my friends was counseling. I volunteered. I started a daycare for the night school people, taking English as a second language. I won awards for that. I won awards for other volunteer work I did. Before I started college, I was a literacy volunteer, and in college, I went to hospice. I became a hospice volunteer and visited the dying. Anything to do that ministry, I couldn't get enough of it. If you walked past me and it was raining, you got my umbrella. And my mother would get like, what did you do with your umbrella? Where is your coat? I lost it. And yeah, I used to get lectured about stop giving stuff away, but I couldn't not. When I saw someone crying on a bench, I wanted to go over and talk to them. It was this impulse that I had to fight so hard. And it's a shame that we do, but sometimes we do. My father, who is a police officer, took me aside and read me the riot act about stopping for a pulled over car. Christina, you're a woman. You're driving to your college by yourself. If a car is broken down, you come home and call someone. Thank God for cell phones a few years later, so I didn't have to, you know, eat my conscience up. But it was all about feeding that need for priesthood in every other way. And standing on the outside of the church steps, looking up and saying, why can't I walk away from this? And at the same time, why can't I go home?
Right.
And it's a very, very difficult place to be, where the way I describe it to people is when you've got a calling, it's not something that you want to do. It's something that you can't not do.
Right.
It's someone that you are. And I was essentially trying to keep one of my limbs from growing out of my body in the womb. I was trying to stop something from happening, but wanted it to happen. And you're trying to comprehend this rationally, and you can't. You want to find a solution for the tension. You want to scratch the itch you can't scratch, and you can't. But that gift when I was four was always part of the equation for me, and I always understood that it was all about timing. And there are several – what's just occurred to me, what cracks me up, is I actually had a missing time episode. But I was with three other people. We all lost an hour walking home from a friend's house when I was 10. But it was all about weird timing for me, coincidences. It was all about Christina, wait, go. And then as soon as I'd go, I'd hear God say go. Then everything happened. And that's the way it was in high school. That's the way it was in college. I couldn't even recount all the times when God said, wait, go. And then I was off. It became very difficult. But at the same time, I was also just sort of coming into my own personality. When I went to the all-girls Catholic college, that's what did me in. Because now I'm finally surrounded by the knowledge and culture of Catholicism in every way, in a way that I really wasn't before. And I spent time with the nuns. My professors were all priests or nuns. No men were allowed to hold positions in the administration. There were male professors, but male students had to go to the night school, which was co-ed. They weren't allowed to go during the day. In that kind of environment, and this was the religious order that heckled Pope John Paul II when he came to the U.S. about women priests. Is completely surrounded by these ladies who are just the coolest ladies ever. While I was there, that calling just went through the roof. I had just joined the Methodist Church my freshman year of college. I had read the entire New Testament. I had started read. Every time I would read something, I have a tendency to read the bibliography and then read all those books too. And so I was doing that, and my knowledge was starting to come together. Anyone out there who wants to study theology knows you don't even know what to pick up first. It's like any subject, except this one's worse because it's not computers, it's 50 years old. It's theology. It's 6,000 years old. So I was slowly going way upon way, and then I'd be in school, and it's the Feast of the Immaculate Conception in December. And I remember looking at one of the nuns and saying, wait, if Jesus was born in December, how long was his gestation period? And the nun just raised her eyebrows and then burst out laughing. And she goes, no, it's Mary's Immaculate Conception. Her birthday's in May. Oh, got it. But those weird things that everyone doesn't get, I wasn't getting. But every time I would get a little bit of information, it would come together. I would sit at the chapel and I attended Mass every day. didn't take the Eucharist, I remember sitting in a meeting because I was part of the ministry council at college. And all of us, when she said it was Mary, a light bulb went off. And I just sat back and I went, oh, well, of course you had to do that. And she goes, of course we had to do what? And I explained to her the logic behind, if you believe Jesus is this, and you believe this happens, then you have to believe that Mary was immaculately conceived. I had no theological background. I had written a 10-page theology paper when I was 12 that turned out to be Dante and Purgatory and the whole nine yards. But I just went through the whole thing, and she went up, and her eyebrows went up again. She goes, I actually hadn't thought about that. So, but I was just finding my way through it, and I would learn a tidbit, and boom, it would explode. But I was still wrestling with what I believed, and I wound up leaving the Methodist Church. When you're smart, you get frustrated when you don't understand something right away.
Yep.
And for me, that didn't happen a lot. And I don't mean that to sound as arrogant as it does, but it did, and I could usually grasp things. But I remember trying to think about the Trinity, and I couldn't get it, so I decided, therefore, it can't possibly be true. I don't understand this, so it's not possible. It just can't be true. And I realize now the arrogance behind that, but I was 20. Of course, if I don't get it, it's not true.
There are later, people that live their lives that way.
Exactly. Later, I would come to find that, accept it, understood it, grasped it in a sort of epiphany. But that's where I was at that point, learning and like a pig in mud. And something happened in college where I finally said, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to seminary. And that was a turning point for me. So a friend of mine, my best friend, his cousin killed himself. He was a young man. He was 17. He shot himself on his own front lawn. And it was a horrible tragedy. And when Ed told me, he was traveling out to Pennsylvania to see his aunt. And I sent her a card. And I don't know why I did this, and I still don't. In the card, I wrote my number. And I said, please call me if you want to talk. She did. Mm. She called me while the family was on its way and said, I need to talk to someone who isn't going to judge me. And she told me about him and about everything. And for some reason, I knew how to listen without talking. I knew how to take it all in. And it was an amazing experience because for a moment I could be someone to whom she could say he was my favorite and not feel judged. And she said, they're in the driveway. I have to go. And I said, okay. And she said, what are you going to do when you get out of college? And the words just fell right out of my mouth. I'm going to be a minister. And she said, I think you'll be a great one. And she hung up. Mm-hmm. And I started looking at seminaries that afternoon.
Pretty amazing how it unfolds.
It is. It was, again, timing. It was timing and listening to those prompts that push. Christina, put your number in there. And the one thing that I always want said of me when it comes to God is that I listened. I tried to. I heard you. I just didn't do it.
You heard that laughter too, huh?
Exactly. It's like, you don't listen to me. Well, I hear you.
That's different.
Oh, but it was when I got to that point, I had left the Methodist Church. I was in the Unitarian Church, which doesn't believe in the Trinity. But after that epiphany, I always wind up like this. I was a Trinitarian Unitarian going off to seminary. No matter where I am, I could be among the weirdest group, and I would find a way to be the weirdest one there. No matter what I try. But
and this, my dear, is why we are such good friends.
I am going to be the queen of the weirdos here, guys. Watch this. But it was at that point, though, that I left for seminary. And what happened there was I got a hold up for that because it's such a perfect place to stop. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah, because the second half of the story is just so marvelous, and that's a good place to pick up. So what an amazing, amazing childhood. And I'm in awe of all the things that came together in your life and all the things that you experienced that most people don't. But also, if they did, they wouldn't have been able to handle it the way you did.
Well, so. I thought I handled it oddly, but hey. It works for me.
Well, I know it was an odd situation. It required odd responses, but
yeah, oddly calm. That was it.
Well, we will pick up the story in the next episode of the Farkas Files. next week, Reverend Mother Christina Rake will be back. Again, her website is Christina Rake. It's Christina with a K, Rake like the gardening implement. And you can find her on Facebook as well. Christina, always a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to the second half of the story, which I know is really juicy. So I hope everybody will take the time to listen to the second episode of From a Weird Kid to Reverend Mother, Part 2.
Thank you. I hope you all come back.
And we will, of course, have a wonderful time. So if in the course of all this you are wondering at all, who is this weird guy, David, and what in the world does he do? You can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab, there's all kinds of ways to get in touch with me, including a scheduling link. I do a 20-minute free assessment of a situation, person, place, whatever it happens to be, to see how my work might be helpful to you. One of the things that's been wonderful this week is somebody used that link to contact me for an appointment, and the first thing they said was, I've been listening to your show for a long time, and it makes a difference. So was very, very gratifying. I know that all of you are out there because I see the numbers, but it's always amazing to have somebody say that. If you want more information about the show, go to thefarkasfiles.com, and the archive is there. We've been doing this show forever, 4.5 years. So there are hundreds of interviews with incredible people talking about not only their adventures, but their work. So please take advantage of that. And of course, Empower Radio is a platform where you can listen to positive messages 24/7, and you can listen to it at empowerradio.com, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, probably some other things. And we also have an app for both mobile phone platforms, and there's a new one, new super duper version of the app coming out in October. So there are many, many ways for you to listen. The Farkas Files is on every night at 9 p.m., and the live recording of a new show is typically on Thursday. So stay with us. We'll have a really good time. So thank you so much for spending a little time with us. The reason this is so much fun is because you're out there. So thank you for being out there with us. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.